and welcome to the Sweep Podcast Christmas Special with me, Mitchell Willis, and him, Michael Ho Ho Hole.
Once a season that gets rolled out, and it couldn't be more enjoyable. I'm excited. It's nearly Christmas. We've got a lot to go through. We've got, as we mentioned in the last episode, we've got our Room 101, where we're going to talk all about the things that we dislike in football. And quite a few of you have been in touch, so thank you for that. We'll get on to your answers later on, and we're going to finish with a new quiz.
And this was one of our favourite episodes last year. It's an opportunity to have a bit of fun, have a few beers, poke a bit of fun at ourselves too, and of course get the listeners involved, as Mike just said. And this year, opening Room 101, and just for those that don't know what Room 101 is, it's an opportunity to shelve your pet hates, and in this case we look at what grinds our gears and boils our piss about the beautiful game that we all know and love, football, bloody football. And you know, it's worth noting that we're not looking to banish our bitter rivals into non-existence, or the players that you just cannot stand. It's the trivial things that wind us up the most.
Shall I kick off, or do you want to go first? Do you want to be Paul Merton in this case, and I'll be the guest, or vice versa?
I'll be Paul Merton, if we're going old school. And I want to kick off with the biggest thing that's annoyed you in recent times.
I mean, this kind of goes back a long way, and it will always happen in football unless they lock the turnstiles. Leaving the game early when there's still a game going on. Why? The amount of fans that you see leaving games in the last 15 minutes is absurd. You've paid a huge amount of money for 90 plus minutes of football, and by leaving early you could miss so much. And I'm going to rely on two main examples here. And they're both from Manchester City games, so apologies to any City fans listening, because it's not just you, it's pretty much fans of every single team across the globe. But both have been told to me firsthand by a family member who is a Manchester City season ticket holder. And the first relates to their playoff final with Gillingham back in 1992. It was the second division, it was their chance to get back to the big time, and City conceded in the 81st and 87th minute to go 2-0 down. And I know that at this point, it's obviously not looking great. You've got 3 minutes of normal time to go. And even at this point, you would have thought that City fans have paid all that money to go down to Wembley. They'll stick it out until full time. At least give their players a clap off the pitch. It's been a long, hard campaign. And it was an opportunity for them to get back to the First Division and work their way back up the leagues. But a lot of them at this point decided that it would be better just to leave Wembley and to try and get in their car and make the relatively quick journey back to Manchester a little bit quicker. And I think when you consider that the game is probably over at this point, you lose any opportunity to be able to go in and watch your City team get back into it. And that's exactly what happened. In the 91st minute, a goal came from Kevin Horlock. He scored to make it 2-1. And then with pretty much the last kick of the game, Paul Dickoff scores. And at that point, these hundreds, possibly even thousands of City fans are running back up Wembley Way to try and get back into the stadium. And a lot of the stewards wouldn't allow them to do so because, of course, they didn't have their tickets with them and they just weren't allowed to watch extra time.
Serves them bloody well, right?
Of course it does. And the game then goes to penalties. City win, and it's one of these where you kind of look back as a Manchester City fan and think, where were you when we got back into the First Division? Where were you when Nicky Weaver saved those penalties to get us back there? And a lot of those fans would have been stood on Wembley Way. I'm going to go to a game 6 years ago now, which I think pretty much every listener that we've got will remember. 2012, Manchester City are at home, trying to win their first league title in 44 years. 44 years, and people are still leaving early because they think the game is gone. They're 2-1 down to QPR. They need a win. Why leave? Just wait. You never know in football. And lo and bloody behold, in the 93rd minute, Edin Dzeko equalises. And in the 96th minute, Sergio Aguero scores that goal.
Aguero!
Imagine being someone who's walked out of that ground and in 40 years' time having a conversation with your grandkids, granddad, grandma. Where were you when City won the league for the first time in 44 years? You had a season ticket, didn't you? Yeah, I was stood half a mile down the road waiting for the tram. What a bunch of wallies. And every single person has been in that position. It's happened so many times. Think of the Newcastle fans who left at half-time when 4-0 down to Arsenal. Imagine not being there to see Chet Tiote's equaliser. Utter lunacy. Can I please put leaving the game early when there's still a game going in it going on into room 101?
I would say it's got to go in there. And I think two examples that spring to mind for me are two Champions League finals. You've got Liverpool, AC Milan, and there's stories of people leaving at halftime and they were 3-0 down, and they've obviously gone on to record arguably the most famous victory in the Champions League final. You've also got what for me was probably more memorable, Manchester United beating Bayern Munich with two goals in injury time from Sheringham and Solskjaer. And as you say, they are moments that you just cherish as a football fan, and to even leave yourself open to not see them is just idiotic.
Right, I want a couple from you now, because that one's going in room 101, and I like yours. I've just had a quick glance over at your running order, and it's a topical one as well.
Foul throws. Absolutely ridiculous. You get paid to play a game where there's only one way to throw a ball, but more infuriating than that is why it's not pulled up. And I think, you know, if it was pulled up, they'd probably sort it out. And it's so frustrating to see these guys getting paid hundreds of thousands of pounds a week and they can't throw a ball properly. And, you know, I look back in February this year and Serge Aurier from Spurs gave away a hat-trick of foul throws in one game. And, you know, at that point, he had more foul throws for Spurs than clean sheets, which is mental. And I saw a quote from Pochettino, and he was adamant they were going to get his players to work on it every single day, because he said, I'm going to get sacked if someone keeps foul throwing. And it's a ridiculous statement from him, but equally, it makes him look a fool.
Of course it does. And Gary Lineker spoke recently about the fact that he thinks that throw-ins should just be outlawed from the game, that they should have kick-ins instead, which I definitely don't agree with, but I definitely agree with your point on foul throws. It's crazy. It's madness. And I think the main reason that players don't get pulled up is because as a linesman, you're told to watch what's going on the pitch. You don't necessarily have your eyes down where players' feet might be or whether they've gone over the line and that sort of thing. But as a referee, there's no excuse. You just have to watch the thrower and then allow your linesman to keep an eye on what goes on the pitch. Number two for you, Mitch, assuming that foul throws is going into room 101.
Yes, it is going into room 101. But unsurprisingly, as regular listeners will know, I have a huge, huge bugbear and be in my bonnet around corners. And, you know, it's twofold and we'll get onto the latter of it. But players on their post as a defending team, and I've desperately looked for stats to suggest it works, and I'm going to research it and prove my point because there's very little out there. But you have less players in the box to head the ball away, but you instantly make the goal smaller. You see outswinging corners more often now too, so the player on the post should be able to read the ball better, and they're useful to have behind the ball to attack the second balls. And it's so frustrating, because I genuinely think you can stop so many goals by doing this. And you know, we're taught this as very, very small kids on a football pitch, to just have a couple of men on the post, you've got your goalkeeper, and then pretty much anything that happens from there is just how it goes. But just, it's so simple. Surely we've got to be able to do better.
And I've got one on this, on corners, because it's another massive frustration for me, especially when I watch Southampton. Not being able to beat the first man from a corner. It is simple, so simple. We've both played low-level football both Saturday and Sundays, and we've both taken set pieces in our time, and naturally we've both been able to beat the first man more often than not. And therefore, why is it that some of the best footballers in the world are unable to do it? It's so, so frustrating. And like I say, I'm going to rely on some Southampton references here. As a Saints fan, it's got me so wound up too many times to remember. In my time supporting Southampton, we've had some fantastic headers of a football. Ricky Lambert, Graziano Pella, James Beattie, Peter Crouch, and that's just to name a few. What do all of these players have in common? They've all been let down by poor service. Dusan Tadic is a gifted footballer. He's ripping it up in the Champions League, but he can't take corners. Adam Lallana got a big money move to Liverpool, and he's the same. These players are getting paid so much money, and they just can't beat the first man from a corner. Now, I have done a bit of research in this one, because there is stuff out there, and it turns out that Pat Nevin did a feature a couple of years back for the BBC on why more goals weren't being scored from corners. And he found that the conversion rate, goal to corner, is around 3%. So out of every 100 that teams take, they are scoring only 1 from every 33 on average. Opta have also confirmed that 40% of corners don't beat the first man. 40%? So that's 4 out of 10 corners that are utter horseshit. Using these simple maths, it's very easy to work out that if teams could beat the first man 8 times out of 10, then the chance of them scoring from corners would increase dramatically. Now, Pat Nevin's a great broadcaster. We both like him. Yeah. He's an indie DJ, an all-round great guy. But even Pat tried to defend why players weren't able to beat the first man from a corner. His list of excuses included the surroundings. Now, he blamed tight advertising hoardings, having to take a step up from the surrounding track of the pitch. 4G pitches can be difficult and fans in and around you. Now, I love Pat Nevin, but this is absolute bobbins. How many players have you ever seen practicing corners at a football match beforehand?
I haven't seen any, but what I would say about Pat Nevin is, as much as I love him, I think of cow Pat, I think of shit. You're talking shit, Pat!
And this is what I mean. Why not take a bag of balls to the corner, either side, go and practice before the game, get used to your surroundings, there's fans around, and it would just give yourselves the opportunity to get the ball into the right area, work out what you have to do to increase your chances of scoring. And I don't know what he's talking about when it comes to 4G pitches, because most footballers train on 4G pitches, and this would give them the opportunity to understand what it takes to get the ball into the right area. And we went to Wolves against Southampton earlier in the season, and I don't think I've ever seen you so frustrated when it came to a football match. There was so many chances to get the ball into the box, but time upon time the players just couldn't beat the first man, and just be better at corners. I mean, I know that there's a lot of football coming up over the festive period, and I can absolutely guarantee that anyone who's going to watch that is going to see some of the best footballers in the Premier League fail to beat the first man. How is it happening? I don't know, but it's going into the Sweeper Podcast Room 101.
I would say that more often than not, it's because footballers are absolute idiots, and none more so the ones that put their hand over their mouth when they're talking. It makes my blood boil, and who cares what you're saying? Get over yourself. Nobody cared before, and nobody cares now. And, you know, if you call someone a dickhead, it doesn't matter. It's a football pitch. And likewise, if you say what free kick routine you're about to do, I don't think the cameras are going to pick it up and get the message back before you take it. And equally, the players are 10 yards back, so they're unlikely they can lip read. Even players in the stands do it, and managers. I don't get it. I don't get where it's come from, because it's almost a fashion thing. And it makes me want to stop watching football.
That's 5 out of 5, all going into Room 101. We're going to take a break here because we both need to calm down. We're going to chill out for a minute or two, and then we're going to come back. We've got one more big one, and then we're going to hear from you lot about what you hate about modern football.
House. Welcome to my house. Welcome to my house.
The Sweeper Podcast playing at your house.
My house. But West Brom travelled to Ipswich on Friday night, grabbed a 2-1 win to move them up to second, but they were bumped down to further following...
I don't know what that is. Good that, mate. Further following wins. We'll keep that, shall we?
Yeah.
Cut. That looks like an exciting box. What's in there?
That?
Yeah.
A portable charger.
That is exciting. What's wrong with your old one?
It's not mine, it's Jamie's. Right. As exciting as rain.
No, it's quite exciting. I like boxes.
Hello and welcome to the Sweet Podcast with me, Mitchell Willis, and him, Michael Hall.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, I'm enjoying the fact that we're recording in a new environment this week.
We are in my front room, and it is a rare treat, isn't it?
It is. It's very autumnal. There's a beautiful view out the window, many trees. The leaves are a golden colour. And, there's probably not very many settings like it.
I would agree. I quite like living here and working here as well, because it's my office also. But there's bigger fish to fry, isn't there? Because we've got a hell of a lot of football to talk about this week. We've got a bumper edition. And we're going to start with... We're just going to get straight into it. Arsenal-Liverpool. Massive game. And a great game as well.
No, I fucking don't know where I was going with that either. Hello.
Test. Bosh. Straight into it. It echoes. Is it echoing or is it me? Welcome back to part two of this festive Sweeper podcast. And we are going to continue with Room 101. And we've got one more from Michael Hole.
We have. And I know that might have been quite long-winded, which is why I put a break in just there. We didn't have that. We didn't have that in the running order. But I'd got that worked up about the things that I dislike about football, that I had to take a little breather and try and come back a different man. But it's not happened. And my last bugbear, I mean, it's not my last. It's just one of the many that we're able to squeeze into the short episode that we've recorded for you. And it's all about added time not being correctly given. It's frankly ridiculous, and it's up there with our biggest bugbears in modern football. Now, I did a little bit of research, and I went onto the Professional Game Match Officials website to try and understand a little bit about the things that make up added time at the end of the game. So, nerd. Yeah, I am a football nerd, and I found out that officials are supposed to award a minimum 30 seconds per goal scored, 30 seconds per substitution, 30 seconds per booking, plus any other stoppages in the game, like injuries, that sort of thing. And I'm going to give you two examples of this. Recent examples. The first one took place just a little bit earlier this month. Southampton against Manchester United. Finished 2-2. So, Mitch, I'm going to test your maths here. 2-2. How many 30 seconds should that be?
4.
That's correct. There were then 4 goals in total. 3 bookings in the first half. So on those guidelines, that should be a minimum of 210 seconds stoppage time. 3.5 minutes to you and I. So the only possible thing to do at 3.5 minutes is round it up to 4. I think it's safe to assume that there are at least another 30 seconds in that half that can be added to the stoppages. So there should have been a minimum of 4, if not 5 minutes. Guess how many were added?
3?
2. 2 minutes stoppage time at the end of that half. Now, as a Southampton fan, I was over the moon because we're on the back foot and we probably would have conceded in that, but it doesn't take anything away from the lack of consistency in Premier League referees. How much stoppage time do you think was given in this game? Blackburn drew 2-2 with Birmingham last Saturday. In the second half, there were 9 30-second incidents, including an awarded penalty. Now, I think we all agree it takes more than 30 seconds from a penalty being given to it being taken. So let's say 10 including that. Add this to the normal stoppages that you'll have in a half of football, and that gets you at least another minute. So that's 6 minutes minimum, right?
Yep.
Wrong. 4 minutes given. Now, people might argue it's not affected the result. Both teams have a point, and that's that. But what if we rewind to leaving games early and teams need something in the last minute? Is it fair to deny a team an opportunity to win a football match? Why should the referee put an early stop to the game because he's had enough? Get in room 101, stop the watch if that's what's needed. Hell, even have a massive clock which adds up every time. It'd get rid of the moans and groans when the board goes up at the end of the game. The ridiculous interviews with managers asking where the referee has got the stoppage time from or why it's not been added on. What do you think?
Are you all right?
No, mate. I've had a long year so far, and I think all that's happened with Mark Hughes and Maurizio Pellegrino has finally got to me, and I've kind of gone over the edge. So I think it's probably time to hand it over to the fans.
It is indeed, and a very different kettle of fish with no maths in there. We've had George Clark get in touch, who we know loves a beer. Loves various different beers and
a beer connoisseur.
He is a beer connoisseur, and he doesn't like Carlsberg, and he's not happy about Carlsberg only stadiums. But I think more importantly, no drinking in the stands. And you know, that latter point is definitely one we can pick up on. Having been to games abroad, we've sat in the stands and we've drank, and you've got to ask the question, is it really going to be a massive detriment?
I think the problem with this one is that they're not employing the stewards that you need to ensure that trouble doesn't kick off. And all it would take would be to give a few more people an opportunity at a job, put them in a situation where they can control the crowds. If it's able to work in a game like rugby, then why is it not able to work in a game like football? A lot of football fans get a bad reputation for the way that they act away from games, and I think that's fair enough. But we went to Aston Villa Birmingham recently. There were quite a few people who snuck beers in the second half, and there was no crowd trouble at all.
I think the biggest question I'm going to ask you now is, how many times have we been at a game, or you and I individually, and we've rushed that pint before we've gone out there, and actually you're 10, 15 minutes in, you're feeling a bit fuzzy from it, and actually, if you could just take your pint out there and just have it casually, you're not binge drinking, as they would say in the media. What difference would that make?
I also think it's a very good point, because half time is horrendous generally. Unless you leave the game 5 minutes early, don't get me restarted on that. Then the queues when you get down into the depths of the stadiums to try and get a drink at half time are incredibly long, and that's why you're often rushing. And like you say, if that wasn't the case, if you could go and get a beer at any time and bring it back to your seat, then straight away it reduces any real risk when it comes to fires and that sort of thing. Because honestly, the amount of people that they cram in at half time before the games is ludicrous. Nobody really wants to go up to your seat, especially the game that you went to at the weekend. It was freezing cold, it was driving rain. Nobody wanted to be up there at that stage. So to have been able to go and get a beer and take it up and watch the game with it would have been a perfect opportunity. And I think this one's a really good opportunity for us to discuss other things that we don't really like about football.
What I will ask you though is, when we went to Hertha Berlin, what about the, you know exactly what I'm going to say. There was one fan who I've genuinely never seen so inebriated at a football match, who sat on my lap several times coming past. He dropped his beer all over me. At that point, I was just thinking, fuck this, I'm never drinking at a game ever again.
That's the problem, isn't it? I mean, you're likely to always get that one person. I think you were unlucky. There was about 25,000-30,000 people in that stadium, and
fucking
you
fuming.
You sat next to pissed Klaus, didn't you? And yeah. And that was the problem. But I think it's an isolated incident, and ultimately all you had to do was wipe off your coat on the way out. He didn't really cause any trouble. He spilt a little bit of beer on you, and I think honestly, if you asked every single football fan going into a match, you might get a bit of beer on you if a goal goes in. You might get a little bit wet. Would they mind? I don't think they would. And that's why for me it's going in room 101.
Fair enough. And I ask you this now, Martin Sigsworth have got in touch with us. What are your thoughts on third kits? He asks, what's the point other than ripping fans off?
I'm actually a fan of third kits.
Piss off.
I really like them. Now I'm joking. I just don't see the point in them. I think that they're clearly there for a marketing exercise. They're trying to sell fans to shirts, and it's just one of those that really doesn't need to be sold in shops. I think Southampton have a third kit which is used for two teams. I think it's possibly Newcastle and Bournemouth. There's not many teams in the Premier League that you really need third kits for, and if you're going to have them, then I don't think they should be sold to fans. And really, I think that the kit designers need to look a little bit deeper at, if you're going to design an away kit, it shouldn't clash with any other team in the Premier League. And that's the most frustrating thing. As a football fan, you go out, if you want to buy the home and away kit for your children or for yourselves, you're looking at least £100 for two football shirts nowadays. And that's absolute madness. And I personally think that third kits should be completely abolished.
And he also hates when fans clap the attendance. I thought it was an interesting one, really. When the attendance is read out, surely it's just a thank you between friends and hopefully a gloat to the away fans.
Yeah, I mean, attendances need to be read out because I guess people need to know how many people are in the stadium. I don't know really where that gets its origins, but it is an interesting point, and I think it is a little bit of a weird one as well, like Martin says, because you might go to a League One game where there's 1,500 people there and you're in a stadium of 10,000. Why are you clapping that? Are you clapping because people have made the effort to go to the game? Is it irony? Is it sarcasm? And yeah, it's definitely a point that I've never really considered, and a very interesting one that's been raised.
And he makes a final last good point about goal music. So the music that plays when a goal is scored. And for me, surely the sound of fans is as good as it gets to be in that moment and, you know, hear the next chant coming is what fuels us as football fans.
Now, I think Martin is probably going to get his wish here, because with the introduction of VAR next season, I don't really know how they can keep goal music in, because if a goal's given and you suddenly start playing music and then they go to VAR and it's disallowed, you're going to look a bit of a plonker, aren't you? And I think that's one that's probably going to come to the fore earlier than a lot of the ones that we've spoken about so far. So it may well be that next season, certainly in the Premier League, sees the end of goal music altogether.
I have to say, though, on premature celebrations, not going in room 101, because it's one of my favourite things, is when a striker runs away when they're offside and they've got that goal disallowed. And I know we saw it at Southampton at the weekend, and there's no greater feeling sometimes than seeing someone wheel off delighted, and just that moment where they clock the offside flag or the teammate tells them, no, mate, that's not happened. And yeah, it's a fine moment in football for me.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mitch. I'm really pleased that you brought that one up. We're going to move on to Russ Collins. Russ, thank you for getting in touch. The thing that gets Russ's goat is the man slap handshake rather than a formal handshake. He refers to that which tennis players do at the end of their matches to show mutual respect. I think it actually happens after pretty much every point in doubles tennis. And he says he's furious about it, and even the refs are doing it. I'm a huge fan of the formal handshake, and I couldn't be further away from the handshake routines of teammates. It infuriates me. It's got to go. That is Russ's opinion, and I, for one, agree with him.
I also agree as well. When I see someone like Jesse Lingard or Dele Alli, it just, I would not want to spend any time with them. I wouldn't want to go for a beer with them. I wouldn't want to do anything. If they came to me and said, oh, I've got a handshake for you, I'd say, piss off.
You are such a Scrooge. Let's move on to Jeff Waddell. Jeff, thank you for getting in touch with us. He's also got a handshake gripe. It's on the same theme in that he can't stand the need for the lineups before every game with every player shaking hands. Captains in the centre circle, fine. He's all right with that. Internationals, okay with that as well. Normal gapes, no. Gapes, no. Games, I think was what I meant to say. It is a load of nonsense.
And I think it probably encapsulates a lot of the so-called pre-game drama that's around now, to be honest. The worst for me, and it's got to go, the floating ball.
Floating ball?
Oh, you must have seen the floating ball on the plinth. Oh, yeah. Just get in the sea. Honestly, it's awful. And we've got to go to long-time listener and long-time friend of the show, Charlie Craven, who's got in touch with us a fair few gripes.
Merry Christmas, Charlie. I know that you are over in Romania, and I think he's coming back over for a Stoke game, isn't he, this Christmas?
Yeah, I think he's bringing his girlfriend back as well. So, much like I said in the last episode, we've got girlfriends going to games, and they're going to hate the lot of them, but they're probably going to hate all the finer things in football, such as the Monday night football debate. And Charlie likes a Friday night game, and I don't think all in this parish are fans of that.
I'm not a fan of a Friday night game, and the reason that I'm not a fan of a Friday night game is because I quite like watching games in pubs, and if you go into a pub on a Friday night in Leeds, it's not the kind of place that you want to watch a football match, is it? It's not very nice to go and watch a game in Leeds. Now, Charlie lives over in Romania, and it might be much nicer over there to go to a local boozer and watch a game on a Friday night. He might like to watch games at home on a Friday night. But I just think the issue with that is, as a football fan, you've then got to take the Friday afternoon off work, or potentially the whole day if it's a big game. And I suppose it's the same with a Monday as well. But for me, Monday night football is one of my favourite things about the week. And I think that Charlie's got a point, because for me, Saturday and Sunday are when football matches should be played. But I think Monday night football's been around for that long. I don't think I can put it in room 101 just yet. What about you?
I don't mind it. I will happily watch football anytime, to be honest, but I'm the same. Traditionalist in me says Saturdays and Sundays is the way forward, but I think, you know, we have probably grown up spending time watching football in different, you know, from different countries at different days of the week as well, so it's acceptable to that extent, and I think I'm happy with it. But he does make another point, a separate gripe around a huge topic, really, of fixture scheduling. And, you know, we've recently talked about the fixtures piling up over the Christmas period, and I think he makes a very good point about the lunchtime games. You know, fans having to travel a fair distance, which is, it's a massive problem when it comes to TV and ultimately Sky ruining football.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that one, Charlie. Let's get that one into the sea, into room 101. Your next point is probably my favourite one that we've had from Charlie, and that's goalkeeper protection. And it's so frustrating.
And we don't mean Petacek's cap.
We don't mean Petacek's cap. The amount of free kicks that are given to goalkeepers when challenges go in on them, and let's be honest, 20 years ago that wouldn't have happened, and I don't really understand why it's continued into modern day football, and why it's developed so much that they've become this protected species. Goalkeepers are mental. They're all crazy. They're in goal for a reason, because they couldn't make it outfield, and I think that to protect them too much just gives off the wrong impression. We want to see headed goals. We've talked a lot about corners, and the most frustrating thing is when someone puts a really good corner into an area where a goalkeeper should be able to go out and challenge, and the referee gives a free kick because somebody got in his way. That's not a free kick. That is simply somebody getting to the ball first, and I'm with you on that one, Charlie.
And another good point raised, overpricing of tickets, which, again, huge topic that, you know, I would have had it too. And, you know, in 2016, 2017, 11 of the 20 clubs in the Premier League would have made a profit, with not a single fan attending any games that season. And again, TV money's going up, and I just, it is so frustrating, because again, you look at the continent and you see such great initiatives, particularly somewhere in Germany, where it's not just the ticket prices, it's also travel. And you know, it's great the Premier League cap away tickets are £30, but they don't even do it in the lower leagues. It's madness. I suspect you'd fill a ground with cheaper tickets and probably break even against the current prices based on more sold in many cases. And as well as that, there's also the drama that Charlie's spoken about, which is penalty shootouts. Now, you know, for me, penalty shootout is not going in room 101. It's going nowhere. I love it, but he suggested it should be down to the two mascots, Sumo wrestling on the pitch.
Yeah, and there was a reason for that pause before you went on to that, and I was going to take over and do that point, and then I realised what Charlie's last point was, and I think it's only fair that I speak on this one. Now, Charlie finished off by saying that he wants to put Mark Hughes into room 101, and we did say at the start that we're not going to put individuals into room 101, so I kind of have to try and break Christmas tradition here, Mitch. I'm sorry.
He can go in room 100.
Room 100, okay. He made Charlie's life a misery, and he's made Mitch's life a misery, because both me and one of our other friends is a big Stoke fan. I'm obviously a Southampton fan. So balls to him. He's going in there. And that's probably the best note that we can finish on, isn't it?
Fuck you, Sparky.
Join us after the break. That's our room 101 done. We're going to move on to our final quiz of the year. Mitch has got the opportunity to redeem himself, and it's a new one. Welcome back to the final part of this year's Sweeper Podcast Christmas Special 2018. And it's almost time for the final quiz of the year. We'd just like to take a moment to say thank you to everyone who's listened to the podcast this season, everyone who's got in touch with us, and everyone who's attended the live events as well. We look forward to putting more of those on in 2019. And keep your eyes peeled. We might even have some Sweeper Podcast merchandise kicking about. Anyway, that is enough of that. It's time to get on to the quiz. We're going to do the quiz in a new format this week, and it is Name That Team. We've picked three games at random just before we've come on air, and they are the FA Cup Final 2017, the Community Shield 2016, and the League Cup Final 2016. We are going to flip the phone to pick who goes with which team, and then we have to name as many players from the teams that were playing individually in that game. So the first game that we're going to go with is 2017 FA Cup Final. It's Arsenal against Chelsea. Mitch is about to flip the phone, and I will call front of the phone. It is the back of the phone. Mitch, would you like Arsenal or Chelsea?
I would like Chelsea, please.
That's who I would have gone for too. So Mitch is now going to name his 1 to 11 for that game for Chelsea. I will then name my 1 to 11 for Arsenal, and then we will see who's got the most. So, Mitch, in goal for Chelsea that day,
I will go for goalkeeper as Courtois. I will go as Azpilicueta. It's getting tough now already. John Terry, Gary Cahill, Marcus Alonso. I'm not sure what formation they're going to be playing, so I'll go with Fabregas. I'm going to go with Victor Moses. Oh, they could play three at the back. I'll go with Matic, and I will go with, in that case, another centre half. I will go with Rudiger. I'm not sure whether he's there then. How many have I got there? So I've got 8 or 9. Diego Costa and Eden Hazard.
That's your 11. Right, I'm going to go on to name my Arsenal team now. And this is much harder because they were absolute bobbins at this point, weren't they? Yeah. In goal, I'm going to go for Petr Cech. I will go with Hector Bellerin as the right back. I reckon that Per Mertesacker may have been kicking about at this point, as well as Lauren Koscielny. The left back, I'm going to go for Monreal. My midfield, and I mean, it could literally be anyone with Arsenal. Let's stick Aaron Ramsey in there. I will go Danny Welbeck. I know he's not a midfielder, but I'm struggling to think of any other Arsenal midfielders at this point. I am also going to go for... Oh, my God, they've changed so much, haven't they? Who else can I go? Alexis Sanchez may well have been there at that point.
Yeah.
How many more have I got to go?
Still got three left.
And they're all going to have to be midfielders, aren't they, as well? Let's go for Mesut Ozil.
Yeah.
And that leaves me two more. Actually, let's go with Mustafi. I think they might have played three at the back. So, in that case, that leaves me one more Arsenal player. I will go for Granit Xhaka. Was he even at the club then? I don't think he was, but I'll stick him in anyway.
Okay, lovely stuff. Right, Michael, get the teams up. Tell me who the Chelsea players were and tell me how many I got right.
So, the Chelsea players in that game, I'm going to start, obviously, with the goalkeeper. It was Thibaut Courtois.
Yeah.
Aspilicueta. David Luiz, Gary Cahill,
yeah.
Victor Moses,
yeah.
Kante,
was it?
Matic, Alonso,
yeah.
Pedro,
yeah.
Costa,
yeah.
And Hazard. I reckon you've done me here because you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 out of 11. The Arsenal team.
Not bad at all. So we have got Ospina in goal. So that's one down already. And then we've got Rob Holding, Per Mertesacker, you got. Nacho Monreal, you got. Oxlade-Chamberlain, you didn't get. Xhaka, Ramsey and Bellerin. Ozil, Welbeck and Sanchez. I think you've got eight.
Eight all. So that's 1 point each going into the next game, which is the 2016 Football League Cup Final contested between Manchester City and Liverpool.
And I'll let you go first this time.
I was going to wait for you to flip the phones. That's very noble. I will pick Manchester City.
Yeah.
So, oh God, 2016 in goal. I think he was on loan at... Was he on loan at Torino then, Joe Hart?
Just go for it.
I'm going to have to go for it. I will go for Joe Hart.
Yeah.
I will then go for Vincent Kompany. Zabaleta. Gael Clichy. I can't change, can I? Kolarov.
Yeah.
So I've now got three fullbacks in a four-man defence. Fernando, Fernandinho, David Silva, Sergio Aguero. How many more have I got to go?
You've got another two to go.
Oh, he wasn't there then, was he? Two to go. Raheem Sterling.
Yeah.
And I will finish with Gundogan, who, again, I'm not sure had signed at that point either.
Okay.
Is that 11?
Yeah.
Right, Mitch, give me that Liverpool team.
I will go with Mignolet. Someone was just about time to say Steve Finnan, but it definitely wasn't Steve Finnan. Nathaniel Klein, Moreno. Gonna go with Sacco in the middle. With, was he there then? I don't think he was there, but I'll go with Lovren. The midfield, I'll go with Henderson. God, they've had some dreadful players, haven't they, over the years. Oh, God, I've had a right mind blank. When was this, 2016?
Yeah.
Henderson. I don't think he was, but I'll go with Wijnaldum again there as well. I'm going to go with Victor Moses again, possibly on loan there. And I will go with Mane, Firmino and Daniel Sturridge. Hit me with it.
So, we're going to reveal the Liverpool lineup first, as Mitch has just answered those ones. So, you've got Mignolet, Klein, Lucas was playing at centre-half.
God.
Sacco is correct. Yeah. Moreno is correct. Henderson is correct. Emre Can you did not get. James Milner you didn't get. Felipe Coutinho you didn't get, but you did get Firmino and Sturridge. So you've got 7 out of 11 there. The Manchester City team was
Caballero, not Hart. Sanya, Company, which you got. Otamendi, Clichy, which you got. Fernando and Torre, Fernandinho, David Silva, Sterling and Aguero. Seven again. It goes down to the wire and it goes down to the Charity Shield 2016, which I'm guessing we're going to have to flip the phone for.
We are going to have to flip the phone for because it was Leicester against Manchester United and I think we both know who we want in this game. He's flipped it and I didn't call it. So flip it again. I'll go front.
Oh, no.
It's the front. I'm going to go for Leicester City. Oh, no. So, in goal for Leicester, Kasper Schmeichel. At right back, Danny Simpson. Centre halves, I'm going to go for Wes Morgan and Robert Huth. Left back, I'm going to go for Christian Fuchs. Now, we've established that N'Golo Kante left to go to Chelsea that summer, so I don't think he would have been playing. So I'm going to go for Danny Drinkwater. I'm going to go for Andy King in Kante's place. I'll then go for Jamie Vardy and Riyad Mahrez, even, which leaves me how many?
Two, I think.
Two. So I'll go for Mark or Brighton.
Yeah.
And what position is the other player? Is it a midfielder? Or is it a striker? You can't tell me that. I will go for... I don't think he was there yet. I'm going to go for Ian Acho.
Acho.
So you're up, Manchester United team for the game against Leicester in the 2016 FA Community Shield.
This could literally be anything. Well, I'll go with, oh God, David De Gea, Darmian, Smalling, Bailly, and left back. Fucking hell, who did they have at left back? I will go with. I'll go with Valencia. I'll say they've got Darmian at left back. So is that my back four covered yet?
Yeah.
Right, so midfield, I'll go with Juan Mata. Carrick possibly still playing then. I will go with... Oh, my God. I'm going to go with Ibrahimovic because he definitely scored, but he might not have started. Was he still there? No, not Rooney wasn't there. Oh my God.
Three to go.
It's Ashley Young, Marouane Fellaini, and Romelu Lukaku.
So before we get into this and reveal who's won, I'm just going to read you what my my Apple device has auto-corrected your team to. So in goal we had De Gea. Right back was Demons. Centre half, you had Stalling and Barmy. It's auto corrected Michael Carrick to Michael Carsick, which is good. And yeah, all the others were, as you said. So let's go and reveal it. We'll do the Leicester City team first. So, in goal for Leicester,
we have got Kasper Schmeichel, then Danny Simpson, then Huth, then Morgan, then Fuchs. So that's five. And in fact, we've got 10. In total, we've got Mahrez, King, Drinkwater, and Albrighton in midfield. Vardy up top with Shinji Okazaki.
I will take 10 at this point, and we'll go to that Manchester United team. In goal, David De Gea. The back four, Valencia, Bailly, Luke Shaw, and Daley Blind. Michael Carsick and Marouane Fellaini were in there. Jesse Lingard, Wayne Rooney was still there. Anthony Martial and Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
What
so, the Christmas team quiz trophy goes to me. It's a clean sweep. I won the season last season, I won the World Cup, and I've done the Christmas special. But Mitch will be back in 2019 to try and win next year's crown. He's going to finish by thanking everyone, I'm sure, but I would just like to say Merry Christmas, have an amazing new year, and we look forward to speaking to you in 2019.
A huge thank you to everyone. Huge thank you to those that got in touch with us. Made this Room 101 such a special occasion for us. And hopefully we've shut the door on some of the things that really get under your skin about football. This beautiful game that we love. The beautiful game that we love talking about every week. And hopefully you love listening to it every week. And that's what keeps us going. Spread the word, as we said. And if it's before Christmas, have a wonderful Christmas. If it's after Christmas, hope you're still tucking into those roses and celebrations, tucking into the beer, and looking forward to a fine 2019. Hasta la vista!
Merry Christmas.
And on show for Sporting was Nanny, who we all know and love.
Old favourite, yeah.
Yep. There's Freddie Montero, who scored a hatful of goals in the MLS. Jeremy Mathieu, who of course had a spell and won everything at Arsenal following... Fuck!
You all right, mate?
I don't know why I said that.
Welcome back to the Sweeper Pos. Speaking to your microphone.
Speaking. I'm fucking struggling today. Big time.
I felt awful yesterday. Like, absolutely dreadful.
Yeah. I feel worse today than I did yesterday.
So hungover. Welcome back to the final part of this week's Sweeper Podcast. And before we get to the quiz, Mitch is going to let you know how you can get in contact with us.
You can get us on Twitter at the Sweeper Pod, Instagram and Facebook. Fuck off.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Sweeper Podcast, and it's almost time for the quiz. Mitch is in the hot seat. I am asking the questions. But before we do that, Mitch is going to let you know how you can get in contact with us.
You can get us on Twitter at the Sweeper Podcast. No, you fucking can't!
Two in a row.